Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi. And welcome to this edition of A Climate Hawk's Companion. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this week we'll be asking the question, what's a REC? Now, the word REC is a three-letter acronym, REC, that stands for Renewable Energy Certificates. The word certificate suggests the idea of a document that attests to some fact, like the diploma that proves you graduated from high school. This is a good start, since having a REC is the way that you can prove the electricity that you buy is green and has been made in an environmentally sustainable way. So that's the short answer. RECs are documents that prove a certain amount of electricity was produced in a good way through wind turbines, solar power, certain kinds of hydro, etc., etc. Now, the whole topic of RECs can be very confusing. To begin with, they go under a lot of different names, like green tags, renewable energy credits, renewable energy certificates, or tradable renewable certificates. Furthermore, the whole concept of RECs is based on fairly abstract ideas, which you need to line up sequentially in order to understand what's really going on. Now, if you go online, there are many websites that try to either explain or sell to you RECs. But they, in my opinion, tend to be full of jargon. So if you're confused, don't feel bad. You have a right to be baffled. But there is a complex, legally defined property value that we're more familiar with, that of stock in a corporation. You might own stock in a company like Whole Foods or Zipcar, but you probably can't put your hand on it. The whole concept of owning stock in a company is pretty abstract, even though you are certain that you own it. Even the paper itself that the stock is written on is hidden away somewhere, deep in cyberspace or in your broker's vault. So RECs are somewhat like stocks in that they are legally defined property rights that are intangible, can't quite put your hand on it, but are very, very real. So here's a definition of REC from Wikipedia, which to my mind has become the fount of all knowledge in the digital age. Anyway, Wikipedia says renewable energy certificates are tradable, non-tangible energy commodities that represent proof that 1 megawatt hour of electricity was generated from an eligible renewable energy source. Okay, that's a mouthful, but that's a reasonable definition. We can go to the EPA website, and they say the following. A REC represents the property rights to the environmental, social, and other non-power qualities of renewable electricity generation. A REC and its associated attributes and benefits can be sold separately from the underlying physical electricity associated with a renewable base generation source. So there you go. There's two different definitions of REC. They're a mouthful in both cases and have to be unpacked in order to really understand what they're talking about. As I said before, you can buy RECs to make your electricity clean. For example, the Mass Energy Consumer Alliance, we'll put the URL up on the blog associated with this podcast, the Mass Energy Consumer Alliance helps you make your electricity clean. How do they do that? They manage a surcharge on your electricity bill that is essentially a purchase of RECs to account for the power that you used in your home, thereby making your electricity clean. Now, this is where people get hung up. They ask, how is it that the same electricity that comes into my home, as it always has, magically becomes green if I pay a few extra bucks to some strangely named nonprofit somewhere that I never see. Many people think the whole idea of Rex is just a scam, where they pay extra money and nothing changes. There's no noticeable change in their electricity, the outlets on the wall, no one comes and makes a new connection to their home. The whole thing just seems fishy. And that's understandable, because as I said, these are abstract and somewhat nuanced concepts, but that's why we're here today, to try and present an underpinning of what's going on with a REC, so that when you go and look at the options you have, you understand it a little bit better. So all this is easier to understand if you have those simple facts and ideas at the ready, or at least in the back of your mind. And we can't cover every detail about RECs today, because there's many providers, there's all kinds of options, and you'll have to do your own homework, but we will give you the ideas that will allow you to understand what a REC is, and then you'll be better armed to judge the different kinds of RECs that you can buy. And you'll feel more comfortable paying that extra money without feeling like a sucker, and you might even understand the news better when things like NSTAR trying to buy Cape Winds Power pop up in the newspaper. So, what are the ideas that we need to discuss and have in our head when we talk about RECs? And I've listed up six of them. Maybe there's more, I don't know, but let's go with these six, and this will get us started. Idea number one is that electrons are identical. That is to say, you can't tell one electron from another. The second idea is that the utilities have a comprehensive knowledge of what electrons are added or taken off the grid. That is to say, the utilities know when a wind turbine or a coal plant puts some electricity on the grid, and they know when you take it off the grid. After all, they're in the business of making money, so they keep track of that stuff. The third idea is that there's a separability or a difference between the physical electrons that make up the electricity you get and the environmental benefits that come from the way those electrons are generated. The fourth idea is that there's value in that environmental benefit. Again, as distinct from the commodity electrons, there's value in the way the electrons are generated. The fifth idea is that we can decouple, we can separate the generation of the green energy from the place that it is consumed. We don't call it global warming for nothing. This is a global problem, so everyone is in the same boat, and we'll try and explain what that means as we go forward. And the last idea, idea number six, is that it's possible to use market forces to encourage the growth of renewable energy generation. And that'll allow us to think a little bit about double counting, how we avoid that, something called the renewable portfolio standard, and the voluntary markets, which is where most of us come directly into interaction with the RECs. So those six ideas sound like quite an imposing list, but they're really not that bad. If we take them piece by piece and march through them, they are, if we try and eat the elephant one bite at a time, we'll do just fine. So let's go back. Idea number one, electrons are identical. Now, I'm a physicist. There are physical principles underlying the fact that in principle, you are not able to distinguish the difference between two electrons. That's just the way it is. Electrons are defined by their mass, their charge, their spin, and in some cases by their trajectory. And it turns out that all electrons have identical mass, charge, and spin. And so it's in principle impossible to distinguish between two electrons. It's a little bit like if you're a pool player, the cue ball is just a white round ball. And in the absence of any scratches on that cue ball, if someone swapped a new cue ball in, you'd have a very difficult time telling that it was a new, different cue ball from the one you were looking at a second ago. So the idea is that electrons are identical, and that has a very, very, very important consequence. What is that? The consequence of that idea that electrons are identical is that you cannot tell where the electrons that come out of the outlet in your wall, where they came from. You cannot tell if they came from a wind turbine or a coal plant. It is impossible, in principle, to somehow paint an electron green at the wind turbine and then say, oh yeah, I got a green electron that made my light go on. It just doesn't work that way. Electrons on the grid are electrons on the grid. It doesn't matter where they came from. So that's idea one. Idea two is the following, which is related, but interestingly in sharp contrast. The second idea is that the utilities know very precisely how much electricity was put on the grid by either a wind turbine or a coal plant. And they know very precisely who took it off the grid. That is to say, your home or industrial plant somewhere. They can tell that. They can't follow individual electrons, but they know how many electrons were put on. So what that does is it leads us to the ability to say that a wind turbine generated a certain megawatt hour, which is a unit of energy, certain number of megawatt hours of electricity that went onto the grid. And you can serialize that. You can write it down on a piece of paper. You have a date, a time, a wind turbine that did it, a serial number, and you can certify that that electricity was made and put on the grid. Now, note that this kind of thing avoids double counting, right? Because every REC has a certain time and a place that it was made, and there you go. It's unique. And only one person can hold that REC, just the same way only one person can hold a stock in a company. That's just how it works. So the utilities know what goes on the grid and what goes off the grid with utmost precision. And that leads us to the third idea. The third idea is that we're able to separate the physical electrons, the commodity electricity, from the environmental benefits of the way that electricity was generated. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably have an acute awareness of the difference between a wind turbine and a coal plant. A coal plant generates all kinds of bad stuff. A wind turbine does not. And therefore, the wind turbine has environmental benefits that are very real and are of value. So, because we can measure all this stuff, we know that a certain amount of electricity on the grid was generated by a method that has environmental value. And then we go on to the fourth idea. The fourth idea is that that value, that environmental value, as distinct from the commodity electrons, value has value. Value means money, right? There's less mercury in the air. There's less sulfur dioxide. There's certainly less CO2. And we can begin to attach money to this environmental benefit. Many of you have heard of the idea that in the long term, carbon dioxide will cause monetary damages of various kinds. And take a look at Hurricane Sandy, right? There's many billions of dollars of environmental damage that at least some fraction of which you could imagine came from climate change. If we made everything from wind turbines, we'd avoid that cost. And that's the kind of thing that gets tied up in the RECs. But because we're talking about value, let's revisit the EPA definition. Okay, the EPA says, and the first paragraph is a repeat. We say the EPA says a REC represents the property rights to the environmental, social, and other non-power qualities of renewable electricity generation. A REC and its associated attributes and benefits can be sold separately from the underlying physical electricity associated with the renewable-based generation source. That's all well and good, but then they go on to say the following thing: as renewable generators produce electricity, they create one REC for every megawatt hour of electricity placed on the grid. If the physical electricity and the associated RECs are sold to separate buyers, the electricity is no longer considered renewable or green. The REC product is what conveys the attributes and benefits of the renewable electricity, not the electricity itself. RECs serve the role of laying claim to and accounting for the associated attributes of renewable-based generation. The REC and the associated underlying physical electricity take separate pathways to the point of end use. As renewable generators produce electricity, they have a positive impact, reducing the need for fossil fuel-based generation sources to meet consumer demand. RECs embody these positive environmental impacts and convey those benefits to the REC owner. I like that. That's a fairly clear statement. It comes from the EPA website. That'll be on the blog. The fifth idea that we can talk about is the following, that we want to decouple, and this is hinted at in the EPA definition, because we're saying that the REC product, which is the greenness of the electricity, is distinct from the electricity itself, the commodity electricity, and they can be sold to different people. So what we're talking about is decoupling the green virtues of renewable power from the electricity itself, and that means what? Well, it's called global warming because pollution from China affects us here in New England and vice versa. When we pollute, it affects people in China. It's a global problem. So you can buy a REC from anywhere, and because it's unique and you're the only one that holds it, you can claim the green attributes of that REC because global warming is a global problem. So this gets to the heart of the fishy scam idea, right? If the clean energy was created someplace in Texas, but the REC is purchased here in Massachusetts, the person in Massachusetts can still claim the virtue of being green because it's all on the same grid and it's all one single atmosphere. Again, this emphasizes the idea that the electricity as itself is a commodity that's different from the REC or the greenness, the virtue of environmental benefit associated with the way the electricity was generated. So there's that decoupling idea, and that's why you can just pay money and someone goes off and buys RECs, and all of a sudden your electricity is clean. Now, of course, some places, and I think Massachusetts is one of them, want or like to have those RECs be local. You know, why is that? Well, if the REC is generated locally, say here in Massachusetts, the jobs are here, right? The economic benefit is here, which is, again, distinct from the environmental benefit, but if you can generate the REC here in Massachusetts, there's jobs, there's industry associated with it, it's all good things. But in principle, on a global scale, it doesn't matter where the REC came from. Finally, we come to the last idea, which is probably one of the more important ones. It's the idea that we can use market forces to encourage the growth of renewables. Right? We have value, economic value, in the clean attributes of the way the electricity was generated, again, distinct from the actual electrons. This value can be bought and sold, and it's defined and certified by the integrity of the REC document itself. Again, we're back to the concept of a stock. You can buy and sell a stock. You can buy and sell a REC, even though you never quite get your hands on the piece of paper. Now, in order to create a market for the RECs and increase the amount of renewable energy, what many states have done is to mandate that the utilities generate a certain amount of their power in a clean fashion or provide a certain amount of clean power. This government mandate is called a Renewable Portfolio Standard, or RPS. You'll see that pop up in different places. In Massachusetts now, the utilities are required this year to have renewable energy credits to account for 6% of the electricity that they sell. That's a pretty good number, but here in Massachusetts, that renewable portfolio standard increases by 1% a year. So next year, the utilities have to make 7% of their energy from renewable power. The year after that, it has to be 8%. The year after that, 9%. So pretty soon, we'll be up to 15, 20, 25% renewable power in the standard electricity that the utilities provide us with. What are the consequences of that? Well, you may have seen how the utilities, NSTAR and National Grid, have been in negotiation with Cape Wind for long-term contracts to buy their power. That's because they get the RECs, and they're able to satisfy the government mandate for these renewable energy credits to prove that their electricity is clean, and they satisfy the government mandate. That's a great thing. So the Renewable Portfolio Standard creates a demand for the RECs. And the demand, of course, creates providers, right? As more and more electricity has to be generated in a clean way, you'll get more and more providers of clean electricity. and that's a very good thing. The other idea that is as closely associated here is the voluntary market. Now, this comes back to the idea of the Mass Energy Consumer Alliance and the various kinds of projects that MCAN has pushed in the past of trying to get people to buy green electricity. It's essentially the purchase of RECs. Why would you want to do that? Well, if you buy a REC with the electricity that comes into your house, you buy a REC, you are denying the utility that renewable energy credit. You're denying the utility that REC. So the utility has to search even farther afield to meet the government mandate. And that's a good thing. That increases the pressure on the utility to find new renewable energy. And so that is one of the reasons, aside from the general good feeling you have from having clean energy come into your house, you're also pushing the utilities to generate even more renewable energy. So there you go. There's the set of ideas that underlie RECs and give you some sense of when you look at these opportunities to purchase clean energy, you'll have some idea of what's going on underneath them. So we'll just step through them again to make sure you've got it. First of all, idea number one is that the electrons are identical. You cannot tell if an electron in your house comes from coal or wind. Second idea is that the utilities know how much electricity has been put on the grid by the wind turbine or the coal power plant, and they can keep track of that, and that's where they're able to define the RECs. The third idea is that you're able to separate the value, the environmental value of making electricity with a wind turbine from the commodity electricity that comes out of the outlet in your home. The fourth idea is that we can place an economic value on the benefit of generating electricity with the wind turbine. So now you're talking money. You have something that can be exchanged and traded. The fifth idea is that we've decoupled the place of generation of the green energy from the place where it is consumed, in the sense that someone in a different place can buy that renewable energy credit and honestly and fairly claim to be using green energy. And the last point is that market forces, in particular the renewable portfolio standard, place pressure on the utilities to buy these RECs, which then creates demand for the RECs and generates new supplies of the RECs by ever more renewable energy generation, which I think we'd all agree is a good thing. So happy hunting. Go out there and find those clean power opportunities to buy for your home. Understand what the RECs are. If you have any questions or comments, or if I've said something wrong, please let me know on the blog. That'd be a wonderful thing. I'm happy to correct myself. And as usual, when we close our podcast, we say that for these many reasons, it's critical that the United States put a price on carbon. We should note here that a price on carbon is a wonderful thing, but it's distinct from the renewable energy credit, which is the value placed on generating electricity with a wind turbine or solar panels. But putting a price on carbon makes the RECs even more valuable. So we'll just repeat it. For all these reasons, the United States must put a price on carbon. I hope you all have a wonderful week ahead, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.